Radio Free Erin will be extended another half hour, so we'll be on from 1:30 to 3 o'clock. Back to back. Siamese twins.
And, John, why do you think they picked the first week in December?
Well, the Japanese went to Pearl Harbor, and we're going to be coming at you.
And so we'll see you in December.
And as promised, 8 o'clock, time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. Couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bone, for the best, just take the worst. I hope that's understood, but Billy Bone.
This is our special Freedom Edition of Off the Hook. Let's start off with the Freedom Anthem. Well, we'll be getting into some more details on the special Freedom Edition of this radio show. This is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein with you here on WBAI in New York. And all around the world on the internet. And we have a lot of important features to get into this week. Fiber Optic is on his way up here. He's on assignment and he's bringing something with him, which I understand is of interest tonight. And we have a special guest who will be joining us in just a couple of moments. First, though, a couple of bits of news. A computer hacker charged with breaking into United States Air Force computers, causing damage estimated at £300,000, that's British sterling, walked free from court yesterday. Yes, Matthew Bevin smiled as he left Belmarsh Crown Court, southeast London, with representatives of a tabloid newspaper 6 months after a London teenager, Richard Price, was fined £1,200 for admitting similar offenses. Prosecutors decided it was not in the public interest to pursue a costly case expected to last up to 3 months, involving witnesses flown from America to give evidence against Bevin, the son of a fraud squad detective. Of course, that had nothing to do with it. The decision comes 3.5 years after two hackers codenamed Kuji and Datastream Cowboy used the internet to penetrate Rome Laboratories, the U.S. Air Force's premier command and control research facility at Griffiths Base in New York. Sources close to the U.S. investigation said the intrusions had serious implications, but did not involve national security. According to a report to the U.S. Senate Affairs Committee, the intruders gained access in March 1994 to unclassified files held at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center and computers belonging to Lockheed. Price, then 16, from Colindale, North London, who went on to win a scholarship to study the double bass at the Royal College of Music. The double bass, yes. To all you bass players out there, one up on you. At the Royal College of Music, was fined after he admitted 12 charges of gaining unauthorized access under the Computer Misuse Act. Magistrates were told he caused more harm than the KGB. But, of course, how much harm did the KGB really cause? Another institution allegedly penetrated by the pair was Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, where wilder elements among UFO conspiracy theorists believe alien spacecraft are secretly held. Bevin, who cheerfully acknowledges being obsessed with aliens, nevertheless denied three charges of gaining unwarranted access to USAF and Lockheed computers between March and May 1994. The charges related to the alteration of data by the alleged insertion of a sniffer program designed to gain access to systems. I think he was just ordered to keep quiet about what he found, and that's why he's walking away. The investigation was carried out by Scotland Yard's Computer Crime Unit and the U.S. Air Force's Office of Special Investigations, known as OSI, for all you people being charged by them and things. Initial charges of conspiracy against the pair were dropped at an earlier hearing. Ponytail Bevin, an X-Files addict obsessed with UFOs, lived a twin existence and saw himself as the Nick Leeson of the hacking world. An Admiral Insurance computer operator by day. At night, he sat beneath posters of his fictional FBI heroes, Mulder and Scully, hacking around the world as real-life American investigators on his electronic trail suspected him of being one of the most sophisticated and dangerous hackers they had ever encountered. In an interview with the Times, Bevin admitted gaining access to computers belonging to the U.S. Air Force, NASA, and the defense contractors Lockheed, but adamantly denied ever altering data. He insists his motive was curiosity, not personal gain. I was after information about UFOs. I just wanted to find evidence of all the conspiracy theories, alien abductions, the 1947 Roswell landings, and NASA faking the moon landings, and where better to look than their computer files. The U.S. Air Force posts details of its personnel and network addresses on the Internet, so anything you want, you can get if you know how. It was a challenge. One source close to the American investigation, however, said at one stage they were connected to Latvia and the South Korean Atomic Research Institute, which raised serious concerns about the former Eastern Bloc and information warfare. Bevin was 12 when he was given a Sinclair ZX81 for Christmas from his parents, Elaine, a nurse, and Thomas, a detective sergeant with the South Wales Fraud Squad. Despite spending up to 36 hours at a time on the keyboard, the family telephone bills never exceeded £60 because he mastered the technique of blue boxing, gaining free calls by sending electronic pulses down the line to trick BT software into thinking a call was over. Yeah, sort of like that. His holy grail was to prove that alien spacecraft are stored in conditions of strict secrecy at Area 51, of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, as suggested in the film Independence Day. Like, that was the first film to suggest that. Although he claims to have seen convincing evidence of their presence, no evidence is forthcoming because he's been told to keep his mouth shut. This is so frustrating. Price was arrested at his parents' home in Collindale in May 1994 and Bevin in June last year. All his equipment was seized, leading, he admits, to withdrawal symptoms. It is all about control, really. I'm in my little room with my little computer breaking into the biggest computers in the world, and suddenly I have more control over this machine than them. That is where the buzz comes from. Anyone who says they are a reformed hacker is talking rubbish. If you are a hacker, you are always a hacker. It is a state of mind.
It should be kicking in by now. We'll be right back.
we're here on the special Freedom Edition of Off the Hook as Fiber Optic settles in to freedom.
Yeah, you know, this is the first show that we're doing that in the past 8 years that I have not been in
some kind of legal quandary.
Some kind of legal conundrum.
Yeah. So now your probation ended on Friday?
It ended on Friday, yeah. Just like that.
And anything you might have read in the papers about what happened on Friday night is totally, totally wrong and misguided. All right. So the reporters never understand it. Yeah. So now that you're off probation, now that there are no ramifications for anything you might say or do, other than, you know, starting fresh, is there anything you want to say or do right now?
Well, there's things I'd like to tell a lot of people.
Uh-huh. We're on a radio station in the middle of New York City, so
no, actually, there's a lot of
people listening.
There's things I'd like to tell a lot of people that I don't particularly like.
Oh.
But
sort of like shout-outs, but not really shout-outs.
Yeah, kind of like
shout-downs.
Inverse shout-outs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shout-outs. Yeah, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
But then we'd have to give them equal time.
Yeah, that's true.
Actually, I don't know if we have to do that, because they're not running for office. But
yeah.
They might, you know, sue us or something like that. We don't want that either.
I don't want to mention any names.
They know who they are.
Anybody in particular. Yeah, they know who they are.
They know who they are.
I want to thank the Secret Service for having the decency to call me and ask me if I wanted all my really dangerous hardware back right before they were going to throw it away because they were cleaning up their warehouse.
That's nice of them to call and ask.
Yeah,
I don't think they asked Bernie.
No,
so they just broke his stuff.
I thought that was really, yeah, you know, that was mighty white of them. And then I'd like to thank the FBI trainee who was at my parents' house, who was allergic to cats, at which time we had two.
So he had him shot?
No, it was a she, and
okay. She
was allergic, and it was provided some comic relief.
The cats, I mean. What happened to the cats?
Oh, they just ran all over the place.
Oh, okay.
But she was allergic. She kept having to go outside. But it was very, very amusing.
Uh-huh. Watching someone else suffer, you found humor in that.
Well, given the circumstances,
prison has hardened you.
Yeah, you know, prison's really hardened me. I use four-letter words, you know. What's the world coming to?
You learned how to smoke in prison, too.
Actually, I smoked before I went to prison.
Yeah, okay. But you learned how to do it right.
Actually, I learned how to smuggle good cigarettes into prison.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, if anybody's going to go to prison, you have to know how to do something.
Is there any way to smuggle those cigarettes out of prison, the ones that you get there?
Actually, I gave them to people. Some people still have packs of those prime cigarettes.
Yeah.
And you know who you are.
You do.
Yeah. Because it's probably the pack of cigarettes that you've never smoked. Or you might have smoked one and realized that it was a really big mistake.
Uh-huh. Well,
horrible, horrible cigarettes.
But, certainly sounds that way.
Yeah, I'm sure I could ramble on and on and on about all the government people that I'd love to thank, but I think we should probably get on to business.
Yes, we do have a special guest holding on who is maybe facing the same road that you're facing. We're going to get to that in a second. First, front page of today's New York Times. Front page. And, of course, everybody's talking about this now because it's on the front page of the New York Times, I guess, and that makes it news. Even though we've been talking about this now for months. Manhattan, short on 212s, will get a second area code.
Wow.
All right. It may not be the Dodgers leaving Brooklyn for Los Angeles or the impending demise of the subway token. But, you hear that? That little hint there?
Yeah.
The impending demise of the subway token?
They know something.
Well, the state's Public Service Commission is expected to approve a plan on Tuesday adding a second area code, 646, for any new phone connections in Manhattan beginning in mid-1998. People and businesses who now have the 212 codes will be able to keep them, ending fears among many Manhattanites that the borough will be divided geographically, with half keeping the 212 and everyone else getting the new code. But the change will require all telephone users in Manhattan to dial 11 digits, one plus the area code plus the phone number for all calls, even within the borough, even within the same building. And the transition to the new system is certain to create confusion for callers throughout the city as they discover that in some cases, even next-door neighbors in Manhattan have different area codes. But, you know, what's really amazing about this is that even if you're dialing the same area code, you're going to have to dial 11 digits.
I mean, I've heard that. They actually do that. They are the dumbest people in the world.
Well, why is that?
Well, because in everywhere else, well, almost everywhere else, you can still dial a 7-digit phone number. I kind of like being able to do that right now.
Well, yes, but if you have what's known as an overlay, where you have two area codes in the same
right.
place, how is the switch going to know what you're dialing? You're going to have to dial 1-646 to reach somebody in 646.
Right.
Now, if you're dialing locally,
yeah.
Why couldn't you just dial the 7? I see what you're saying. I don't know. There's got to be a reason why they have to do that.
I think they're doing it out of fairness. Uh-huh. I think they're trying to say that the 646 people, in order to be fair, we got to make everybody dial 11 digits.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems awfully fair of them. Also, because of a similar depletion of numbers in the 718 area code, the 11 digits all the time system might also be making its way to the rest of the city. You know they're going to be getting 347, and that's going to be happening pretty soon. I think this one is scheduled for April 1st, 1998, and 347 is scheduled to be implemented January 1st, 1999. Scanning this article, I just saw this for the first time a few seconds ago, so I don't think there's any other real details here. It's a huge article. I mean, they really go into a lot of detail here, but among the biggest opponents to the so-called overlay plan are companies like MCI, AT&T, Sprint, and the RCN Corporation, which are trying to battle the industry giant, Bell Atlantic, for the local telephone market. I guess that means every new phone number they get is going to be in a new area code. Those companies have argued that phasing in the 646 area code among new customers gives Bell Atlantic an unfair advantage by leaving that company with the bulk of the 212 numbers, while Bell Atlantic's rivals only get 646. It's very helpful to the incumbent telephone company because it has a stockpile of old phone numbers, said a spokesman for RCN, who signed up 50,000 business customers in Manhattan. So yeah, that is an argument. But you know, I think this is the best deal. I wouldn't want to have to dial. What are you looking at?
I've just been handed something that's making me angry.
Okay.
It's
Put it down first.
Okay. It's a piece of plastic.
Uh-huh.
Looks like the, judging by the shape, the type of plastic you'd see inside one of the windows on a payphone. You know, on the actual payphone itself.
Uh-huh.
And on one side, it says Bell Atlantic, coin local calls, 20 cents. And I'm sure somewhere in Bell Atlantic, a payphone call is still 20 cents.
Yeah, well, they just raised them to 35 cents.
Yeah, I know, and I flipped the thing over, and it looks like they're already in planned ahead.
Uh-huh.
Because all you got to do is come and flip the plastic over, and it says 35 cents.
Well, the question is, where is it 20 cents?
Yeah, I know. That is a good question.
Well, where did this thing come from?
It was just handed to me. Newark. Oh, okay, Newark.
So in New Jersey, it's only 20 cents, and now it's 35 cents, or?
Huh.
That's kind of strange. I didn't know that.
Me either.
I'm told that that Bell Atlantic and the New York City... the New York Public Service Commission are appealing the requirement. Apparently, it's a federal requirement that you dial all 11 digits in an overlay situation. So our Public Service Commission doesn't want to do that either. The phone company doesn't want to do that. The people don't want to do that. The PSC doesn't want to do that. So apparently, it's some sort of stupid federal law that says if you have an overlay situation, you have to dial all 11 digits, even if it's the same area code. So... Also, in answer to the question, can I get a 212 number in the future? The answer is possibly. Next spring, something called number portability is expected to be in place in Bell Atlantic's computers. It means that customers with 212 numbers, when they switch phone companies, can keep the numbers as long as the customers stay in the 212 area code. It also means that when someone moves out of the 212 area code, it will free up that number for assignment to another customer. So it'll get pretty confusing. And 646, I don't think, is going to be... As prized as 212, but what are you going
to do? Doesn't have that flow to it.
No, but it is sort of a similar type of number, you know. It's a big number, little number, and the same big number again.
Yeah,
I think that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to make us happy, so we should appreciate that.
Small consolation.
Yes. Now, do you have anything there that you want to share?
Let's see. Well, actually, I did want to mention. We've been meaning to mention this for weeks now, and I think you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, the DVD thing. Okay,
yeah.
let's mention that and move on to our guest.
Okay.
Because he's been waiting very patiently. And
We meant to mention it 2 weeks ago, and we ran out of time, and then we kind of slipped our minds last week.
Yeah.
But basically, a way to copy DVDs has been discovered.
That's right.
If you will.
Throwing the industry into chaos.
The problem is the industry doesn't really seem to be reacting at all.
Uh-huh.
I think they have bigger problems, like certain companies coming out with DVD formats that aren't supported by anybody else. So the fact that people can copy them might be fairly low on their list.
Mm-hmm. They just want people to buy them first.
Yeah, I think they want people to buy them first and know that they're going to work in the player they have.
Yeah.
Which is currently a problem. But anyway, company by the name of, I believe it was Zoran, Z-O-R-A-N, makes piece of software called Soft DVD. And Soft DVD is, it's basically a software implementation. It's, you know, if you will, the drivers for say, a computer, for a PC,
mm-hmm.
that would allow you to have a DVD-ROM drive. The problem with Soft DVD specifically and its implementation is that the main workhorse of the actual DVD protocols is implemented in software as opposed to hardware. And if you recall when, just in a similar thing is when DES first came out, it was actually, it was considered bad with a capital B. Mm-hmm. If DES was implemented in software, but that was relaxed and it was eventually changed. Originally, you were only meant to implement DES in hardware. Well, I had thought, according to the things that I had been reading, is that the DVD engine itself was supposed to only be implemented in hardware, specifically for the very reason of making it difficult to copy DVDs because of the encryption they use. Well, guess what? This whole encryption engine and everything else was implemented in software.
Oh boy.
Now, one would think, okay, so now all I have to do is figure out what kind of algorithm they're using. No, you actually don't even have to do that. Because all this guy really did was he took the device driver for the DVD drive and he wrote a little C program that compiles under Windows 95 and Windows NT. What it does is it basically hooks into the DVD device driver and intercepts calls for when the DVD is being read, so that what you can do conveniently is as blocks are being read off the DVD and conveniently decrypted by the DVD device driver in software, you can simply shunt those blocks directly to disk. Completely free and clear, unencrypted, and do whatever you want with the data. Burn it onto a CD,
uh-huh.
Do whatever you want.
Another DVD-ROM.
Well, actually, writable DVD-ROMs, I think right now are about $10,000.
Uh-huh.
So I think they're out of the price range of most people. But what a lot of people have been doing is taking DVDs, reading them using this method, and then just writing the information, burning it onto a CD-ROM.
So did we say this was impossible a couple of months ago? We never said that, did we?
No, we never said that. I'm sure it was going to happen. In this case, I wasn't thinking that they were going to be so dumb as to have such poor controls over the technology.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could have seen one day somebody getting a DVD-ROM drive and, you know, setting up some kind of, like, jumper somewhere and figuring out a way to read the information off a DVD while it was running, like, basically with the guts hanging out. That was what I was envisioning.
Who did this?
Actually, I don't remember what the guy's name was, but
He probably prefers it that way.
Yeah, I mean, originally it was on our favorite hard-to-remember site, GeoCities.
Right.
With some completely impossible mangled URL to get to the information, which I still can't figure out what these people are doing. But apparently the guy who put up that info had to take it down for some reason that he did not disclose.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually reported in one of the online computer things. It might have been CNET. Basically, if you want, I'm sure you could find the story if you do a search in Yahoo or AltaVista or whatever.
And there's been no reaction whatsoever from the DVD.
I haven't seen any response whatsoever from the industry.
Okay, probably...
Basically, if you do a search for soft DVD, one
right.
word,
uh-huh.
capital S, capital D, capital V, capital D, I'm sure you will turn up lots of useless information, but somewhere in there, you're bound to find the little C program.
Well, I'd like to know what people are able to do with this.
Yeah.
They're able to actually use this technology to their advantage.
Yeah. And actually, one more note about that is if you've recently purchased a Compaq, one of the options for a lot of the newer Compaqs includes a DVD-ROM drive. And in many cases, whether you specify the DVD-ROM drive or not, you end up getting the DVD-ROM drive device driver. Whether you do or not, that's great. What you basically do is, you know, whip up that C program if you're a Windows 95 or NT user and copy away some DVDs. Or if you know somebody that has one of these drives, then you can basically convince him that it's a good idea to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Or something. But it sounds like the encryption was really just a great big waste of time.
Interesting. Well, speaking of great big waste of time, we have on the phone with us, not that this person's a big waste of time, but what he's been through is a big waste of time. I don't know if you heard about this. A few, I guess it was months ago, maybe it was more than a year ago, a NASA website was hacked. Well, I mean, that happens all the time, I guess, but this was a particularly interesting one, and it got a lot of publicity, and the person who did it is from Delaware, and he's only 14 years old. Joins us now on the telephone from an undisclosed location. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
And what name are we going to call you again?
Our host.
Our host, okay. Which is a very insecure thing to have on your system. But but you're not an insecure thing to have. You're something that actually finds security holes. Now, tell us, what is it that you did on this system, and when was it?
It was sometime around January.
January of this year?
Yes, 97.
Okay.
And I used PHF, you know, and I got the password file, and I cracked an account, which was the password as the same password was the login. So I logged in, and it was like running like an old Sun. It was an old Sun system.
Uh-huh.
And I got root with one of the many available exploits. And
what kind of OS were they running?
It was like Sun 4.
Uh-huh.
And I just I didn't even delete their HTML files. I renamed them and uploaded my own. And I did it because I was trying to get a point across about what they were doing with Mitnick. And
well, what did you change the site to say? What did the site say first of all? It was a NASA site?
Yes, it was a NASA page. And
the main NASA page, or was it?
It wasn't the main one, of course.
Okay, it was
Marshall Space Flight Center.
Marshall Space Flight Center. Okay.
Yeah. And I changed the web page, and I was just I don't know, giving them my opinion on what they're doing with Kevin, and not just what they're doing with Kevin, but what they're doing with everything.
Mm-hmm.
This
being NASA, or the federal government, or who?
The government.
Uh-huh.
Them.
So now, basically you gave them an alternate view about, well, I guess you drew attention to Mitnick. A lot of people probably visiting the NASA website didn't realize who Mitnick was, and now they do.
Right.
So what happened? What was the response?
Well, I thought I was successful with it. I deleted the log files, and turned out that 2 months down the road, they would show up at my door.
Took them 2 months?
Yeah, and then they claimed it took a week.
Uh-huh.
But, you know.
So they show up at you. First of all, how long did the site stay in the altered position?
Like 2 days.
2 days over the weekend or during the week?
Over the weekend.
Okay. All right. And then they well, first of all, when you changed the site, did you delete everything or?
No, I didn't delete it. I didn't delete a single thing except the files. Or not the files, yeah. The logs.
Uh-huh.
I deleted the logs.
Okay. So what happened to their files that had their webpage on it?
I renamed them.
Okay, so all they had to do really was copy back what it was that you renamed, and their site would be back. But it took them 2 days to do that. Okay, so they found it, they changed it back, they tracked you down after 2 months. What happened then?
Well, I was in school when they showed up at the door. So the only person that was home was my father, and he called my mom and had her pick me up from school. And my mom had told me then that NASA wanted to speak with me. So when I got home, they already had.
That's an unusual kind of message to get at school, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, everybody kind of just looked at me when I walked out, but, you know, it was scary because I knew what it was about right when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I, on the way there, I used my mom's cell phone, and I was calling some of my friends because I had files on their Linux machines that they shouldn't really have. So I made sure they took care of those. And I got home, and they already had been in my room, my attic. They had taken all my, any computer-related book, My computer was already in their car. I mean, it wasn't like a lot of people showed up at my house. It was someone with the Inspector General's office in Huntsville, Alabama, and two state police detectives and another federal investigator.
They probably made all kinds of wisecracks, too, while they were there. About how they used to play with baseball cards when they were your age or something like that.
Yes, yeah, exactly. They did. That went exactly.
Oh, boy, I could be a Fed. Wow, that's cool.
Well, Manuel, you know what NASA stands for?
What?
Need a Smarter Administrator.
Ah, yes, of course.
Exactly. Well,
it would certainly seem to be the case. Now, okay, so you got dragged through the court system, though?
No, I made a, not to say a deal with the devil, but, I don't want to say right here.
You basically pleaded something.
Well, yeah, I didn't have to go through the court system.
Okay, so what was the outcome of it, and when did this take place?
I don't know, in August, I signed an agreement with them, and I signed that, and everything was going fine until a couple sites got compromised here in Delaware.
Now, this is something that has recently happened.
Yeah, over the past month, the state police have been investigating, like, two systems that have been compromised.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, who do they think it is but me?
So you're the prime suspect for anything that happens in Delaware?
Right now it seems that way.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure it's not, but that's the way it seems to me.
Well, how do you know that you're a suspect?
I had to go see... they actually had a meeting with me. They had contacted my parents, and when I went in there with my lawyer, they had told me, "We know you are involved."
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, they watch NYPD Blue. They know how to use those tactics, you know.
And after we talked about it, and they told me that they were investigating two things in Delaware, and then they said somewhere in England got hacked, and they were investigating that somewhere like really off the wall. I didn't know what it was.
Uh-huh.
And, I don't know, after about a half hour, one of them asked if they could speak with me alone without my lawyer. And I said, sure, and he tried to get me to say a whole bunch of things that I really didn't do. He wanted me to admit the things. And
how did your lawyer take that when he asked if he could speak to you without your lawyer?
Well, he asked me if you know, I thought it was okay, and, uh-huh. Well, it was. I mean, I already knew what he was going to try to do, so.
Right.
Well, in the future, you know what you do when somebody asks you to do that?
What?
You say no.
Well, the thing is, I get the feeling that you don't have anything to hide.
No.
So basically, you see, he believes that since he has nothing to hide, telling the truth is the right thing to do. Now, Fiber, you're more jaded. You've come out of prison, no, 3 years of probation. Tell us how it really
telling
is.
Telling the truth is the right thing to do, only your attorney should be the voice box for this telling of the truth, not you yourself.
Yeah.
Because in this kind of particular situation, you might not really be thinking in your own best interest.
Yeah.
Well, now, you're 14. Have they ever actually said that they're going to imprison you for anything?
No, they make it seem that way, though. They said, well, if you're honest now, we might be able to cut you a deal in the future, and if you lie to us, well, you know. So they tried to instill that fear in me, but it looks that way to me.
Well, I mean, have 14-year-olds ever been sent to federal prison?
Not to my knowledge.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
They would get sent to juvie hall.
Have they brought that up to you?
So yeah, what was it, a federal boot camp or something?
They want to send you to a federal boot camp?
Yeah.
I see. Now, this is all based on these recent allegations, which you say you're not involved in.
Right.
So where do things stand now?
Right now, they're still investigating, and they're reading my email. I mean, they read everything that comes by my way. And
how do you know this?
They had shown me email printouts from one of my now former friends that he had forwarded.
Wait, one of your friends forwarded your email? How did your friend get your email?
Well, no, not my files in my directory, but I had emailed him about what happened because I knew the person that did it.
Right.
And they had printouts of that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So they had to have gotten that from him.
Yeah, because if they didn't get it from him, they would have to bring a subpoena to the place where my email is at.
Uh-huh.
Could I give this man some advice?
Go ahead.
Okay, when you're in a particular situation like this,
yeah,
you don't send anybody email.
I didn't know I was being investigated.
That's okay. Once you get raided by the government,
yeah,
you stop sending email. You stop reading email. You stop talking to people on the telephone. And if somebody calls and wants to talk to you, you're not home.
What about on the phone to a radio station?
Well,
I'm not home, though.
That's a different story. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Because anything and everything could be misconstrued.
Right. Especially if they're looking for something, they can twist it. That's one of the reasons Kevin can't speak to anybody, because anything he says will be twisted against him and used in all kinds of ways by the government. And unfortunately, that's kept him in prison for years. So... do you regret what you've done? I mean, would you have, gone down a different path if you'd known it was going to turn out this way?
Well, I don't regret what I did, but I had a big mouth when I did it, and that's what got me in trouble.
Uh-huh.
So...
You had bragged about it at a local pub or something?
On IRC.
Yes.
Oh!
So, I had one of those nice IRC ops send that to NASA.
There you go. IRC is the downfall of...
The entire room just frowned in disdain.
Yeah. Now, you say that they're monitoring your email. Are they doing anything else? Tapping your phone lines, following you around, things like that?
Actually, my friend that was one of the places that got hacked, he actually knows one of the people that worked there, and he had told him that they had my phone tapped. And I noticed, like, when I go to the university... I have people follow me around that really...
Well, first of all, why do you go to university?
For computer science courses.
You take classes at a university?
Yeah.
Okay.
And...
You didn't do that when you were 14, did you, Fiber?
No, I was too busy using other people's computers.
Ah, there you go. Okay, so you're taking courses at a university, and you say people are following you around there.
Yeah, they really don't look, like people that are actually at a university. Call me paranoid, but I don't think people will walk around with earplugs, I don't know this, but, normal people don't walk around with earplugs.
Right, they use headphones usually.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, you had mentioned before the show that you had a special restriction that had been placed on you since August. Do you want to tell us what that was?
That I wasn't allowed on the internet.
You weren't allowed to use the internet at all?
Right.
Okay, so... have you been able to stick to that? And
no.
Okay. okay. Why not?
I don't know. It's something. It's my daily life. It's like part of my life. It's everything that you do is so much easier to do, and so much quicker to use the internet. As if someone was on, like, you wanted to email somebody and they're always there, they can get their email quicker than you can call them. Mm-hmm. It's school projects, everything. It's just right there.
Uh-huh. So you're saying it's almost impossible to live your life in school without using the net at some point.
Exactly. I mean, we use it at high school, and it's like you have to. Uh-huh.
Well, would you be comfortable with the restrictions saying just don't hack any more government websites?
Yeah, that would have sufficed.
Okay, so maybe we could work out some sort of compromise deal. Well, did they actually say that? Is that part of your sentencing guidelines, or was it more of an informal thing?
It was informal. I never signed anything that said I had to stick by that, but that was said to me.
Uh huh. Fiber, does he have to stick to that if it wasn't written down on paper?
Oh, all they did was voice their opinion that he shouldn't do this?
He didn't voice my opinion, or his opinion, rather, but...
This is your probation officer?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, if they told you to do that, you're not... if they find out that you are, despite what they told you not to do...
Yeah.
It's not really going to be very good, because the probation officer is the one who makes the recommendation to the judge on your character, as far as... how you should be dealt with. Mm-hmm. And you want to piss this person off as least as possible. Sometimes it's completely unavoidable, but this is something where you obviously have a choice.
Well, now, this person has found out, I assume?
Yes, he found out when I went to meet with the detectives.
Uh-huh.
And he was quite angry.
How did he find out?
Well, they told me to be honest, and, I was honest.
Okay, so you basically told him that you were using the internet?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, don't look so mystified, Fiber. People are honest, and it's like they believe honesty is the best way. It doesn't always work.
Well, yeah, but it reminds me of that scene from Monty Python where they're waiting online with crucifixes.
Uh-huh.
And the guy says, crucifixion? And the guy online says, no, actually, they said I could go live off on some island somewhere. It's like, oh, okay. There are some things you just shouldn't say.
Well, they told me if I was honest, they would, you know, they could be able to cut a break in the future if, you know, something had, you know, they found something out or whatnot.
Yeah, but you could say absolutely nothing to them ever and still cut the same deal.
Well, I mean, the important thing is that what they're accusing you of, you're innocent of. And I think that's what you have to, you know, come back to. You know, if there's evidence against you in a certain case, then they have to present that evidence. They can't just go and say, well, somebody hacked something in Delaware, so it's got to be you. You know, and I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
All this other, you know, whether you use the net or not, or, you know, who you're sending email to, that's just, you know, it's nothing that will result in anything really major, I don't think.
No.
All right, well, what kind of reaction have you been getting from friends, relatives? Has the media gotten a hold of this?
No, they haven't gotten a hold of my name. I'm pretty happy about that, because...
Uh-huh. Well, legally, they can't print your name because you're a minor.
Right.
Well, I think they would if they could. But let's hope they don't. All right, well, our host, if you want to stay on the line, maybe some of our listeners have some advice.
All right.
Are you okay wherever you are right now?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Our number is 212-279-3400. We're speaking with our host, 14-year-old hacker from Delaware, who hacked the NASA webpage, and now is finding that he's being suspected of every criminal computer act that takes place within 100 miles, and actually over in England, too, somehow.
Yeah.
All right. 212-279-3400, and we welcome calls from all around the world, if you're listening on the Internet as well as in New York City. Good evening. You're on the radio.
Well, I don't know you, but I'm proud of you. I think you did whatever you did, you know, you just did what you believed in. I have to say one thing about when they tell you about cutting your deal.
Yeah.
Basically, the first time I was ever picked up, they told me, don't worry, you'll be out of jail enough time to see Saturday Night Live. And then I realized, of course, that wasn't on for a few years. And then the second time, another precinct entirely said the same thing. You'll be home in a couple hours. You'll be home sitting back watching Saturday Night Live. And then I thought, you know, it's not even Saturday. So they tell you, you know, we'll cut your deal, cut your deal. It's best to not talk. You know, you're not entitled to say anything but your name and address without legal advice. You know, if you don't have advice of an attorney, you don't have to have an attorney either. You're not forced to. But you don't have to do anything but say your name and address. And the thing about the one telephone call, unfortunately, that's not written anywhere, you know. So, but you have to really insist that you want an attorney if you want to do it that way, or someone that you want to speak for you. But you're not required to. And I think Flapper is right to not say anything at all.
Yeah, cooperating with the authorities has resulted in a lot of people going to prison.
It's the nicest. You know, the cops. They're just doing it mostly because they want to go home. And they want to go home to see Saturday Night Live themselves.
That seems to be the theme here, yeah. Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
It's probably where they learn their interrogation tactics, too. All right, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
If you had some advice to give to somebody who was contemplating hacking a website, what would you give them? Would you tell them not to do it, or would you tell them to do it in a certain way, or things not to do? What?
Just keep your mouth shut.
Uh-huh.
Don't mention it, you know.
I mean, as far as the actual hack itself, like what's considered proper, what's not?
Well, I mean, I'm not entitled to say what's proper and what's not. I mean...
Well, I'm, in your opinion, you're not speaking for anybody else.
Well...
As somebody who has hacked a site, who has actually changed a governmental website, and there are a lot of people out there. In fact, this past weekend, I think 25 Indonesian sites were hacked and wiped. They erased them. And the reason they did that was because of the situation in East Timor. It's a lot more, you know, intense there, and I guess erasing files is seen as justified. Would you ever do something like that? Do you see that as something that's justified?
I wouldn't really delete anything.
Uh-huh.
I don't, like, really believe in just getting in the system and just erasing every file there is.
Uh-huh.
It'd be much more interesting to actually, you know, see what the system's about, what goes through it, you know. Poke around in people's directories and just look for things. I mean, don't make yourself known that you're there. It's like changing a web page or what, you know, what you want to do. It's when you hack a web page, they're going to spend money to try to track you down.
Right.
Especially if it's NASA.
Yeah.
I mean, of course. And then when they find you, if you're an adult or they want to charge you, they can, you know, pin that bill right on you.
Right. Well, I mean, do you think people should use this ability just to, you know, boast about their greatness at hacking web pages, or do you think it's a worthwhile way to communicate messages that the American public otherwise would never have heard about, things like Kevin Mitnick?
They shouldn't hack just to boast, you know, I can do this, I can do that. If they do it to get a point across, it's a better way to get your point across, that actually it'll meet the news, and you can't just call up the news and say, hey, you know, I found something out, and I want to say it to the public. If you hack a page, though, they have a chance to get it themselves, and the government really can't cover it up that quick.
Right. Right. It's kind of an opportunity to reach an audience that you ordinarily would not reach. So those people who do this kind of thing should consider that, you know, that you actually have an opportunity to, you know, to hit people over the head with something and make them think, rather than just make them think that, you know, you're some evil person that needs to be locked up. Maybe there's a chance, if you're going to go down this road, to do something constructive. All right. By the way, you should turn down your audio a little bit, because we're hearing you streaming. Yes, and
right.
It's about 20 seconds delayed, I think, because you're listening to us over the internet. Our phone number is 212-279-3400. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
Hey, is Fiber there?
Fiber is sure right here. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Toronto.
Toronto. You listening to us right now?
Yeah, but I can't hear you on real audio.
So how could you be listening to us then if you're not hearing us?
Oh, no, I'm not actually listening to you. I'm kind of guessing. Because something is messed up with the real audio here.
Really?
Well, I don't know. I got some real bad news about your site, about the 2600 and the financial problems and stuff.
Oh, that's something unrelated. But, I mean, tell us about the real audio right now.
Oh, well, I tried to access the site, and I don't get that little button that says Live Connect. The link just isn't there.
Really? Did you try refreshing?
No, it doesn't. You have to go to the main page. It's because I had that problem too, and I couldn't get it started. I couldn't get the audio going through.
So what did you have to do?
Hold on, I gotta bring up Netscape again. I don't remember what I did.
Is he calling from Toronto too?
No, he's in Delaware. He's our guest. So basically, you connected to the main page, and you don't have the button saying to do live streaming.
No, not really. But you guys had a caller from Toronto last week,
right?
And he was talking about 2600 meetings.
Uh-huh.
And if he could call me and get in touch with me, I'd like somebody to contact, somebody that I could meet at the meetings,
okay,
so I wouldn't be going blindly.
Right.
So if I could just give out my number to him.
That's probably a really bad idea.
I don't think you should do that here.
Don't give it out over the air. No, I think he wants to give it out to... you are going to give it out? No, don't give it out over the air. We can't really let you do that.
Anyway, I just want to talk about a cable modem flaw that I've experienced.
Hang on, before you do that, R-House, did you figure out what we're supposed to do with the website?
Go to the main index and just click on LiveNet Broadcast, and it takes you right to it.
So isn't that what it's supposed to do?
Yeah, but instead of going to, like, off the hook without... There's usually an icon there, and it's not there.
So if you go to the main off-the-hook section...
Yeah?
What happens?
Then I just get the... It says real in the background and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
But I don't get that little box that's in the left side.
It's the page that says off-the-hook on sale.
Yeah, that's all it has. It has the off hooks on sale.
So where do you have to go to get the actual real audio part?
Well, go to 2600.com and then go to our main page.
Right.
And then click right on LiveNet Broadcast, and it takes you right to all the different streams.
Okay. Well, I thought that's the way we were doing it, by clicking on that particular button. Well, people are figuring it out. I think that's the important thing.
Oh, my ISP is screwed in the bum, so...
Okay. Well, I think you can now join us on the net, sir, since you now know how to do that. So you have a point about cable modems.
Yeah. Over here in Toronto... We have something called Rogers. They make the cable modem access here. It's called The Wave.
Okay.
And apparently, when I was at my friend's house, we were experimenting with it, and I said, hey, click on Network Neighborhood. And I'm not sure if this works in other places or just his PC, but when we clicked on it, we had a list of every single person who was using The Wave and their computer in the Network Neighborhood. Now...
Wow. That's handy information.
Some unfortunate individual, I don't know what possessed them to put file and printer sharing on. You would theoretically have access to their hard drive.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, actually, the original release of Windows 95 had that on by default.
Yeah, exactly. So some of these newbies who are using, who are just getting computers for school or something like that, may have some thinking to do.
Yes, they may have quite a lot of thinking to do. That's
Has Bernie S. been on?
Not this week, no.
Oh, he's not been on?
No.
Okay. Last week, I sent an email asking about sending you guys about the smart cards and the 10 pictures of the close-up smart cards.
Okay.
I was the one who sent that email. And my real audio cut out right at the part when you were about to answer my question about the intro song. Now, I asked if it was sung by Atari Teenage Riot, and...
Well, you know, we played Atari Teenage Riot tonight, but no, the intro song is not Atari Teenage Riot. The intro song is Don Letts of Big Audio Dynamite. But, you know, you can click on last week's show and listen to it, and you'll hear your answer to your question then, too.
Ah, but what's the name of the song?
It's called Much Worse.
Much Worse.
Yes, it's a flip side of a single called Just Play Music, which you won't find, so don't bother trying. All right.
One more thing.
Yes.
You know when Fiber was on, I think, Discovery Channel or NBC, ABC, or whatever that was?
One of those, yeah.
Actually, I was on both, NBC and Discovery.
Well, there was that nationwide address. We were on all the networks at once.
Yeah.
Yeah, what about it?
All right. When he was talking about the White House security and stuff like that?
That was NBC, yeah.
Yeah. How would I get access to the... Could I get a copy of the tape from ABC, or do you have any kind of information
NBC.
On...
It's NBC. If you call the NBC newsroom and you tell them the date and what it was, there should be no reason why they couldn't send you a copy of the tape. There might be a fee because you're so far away.
I think there'd be a fee if he was outside the door. I think
Fiber, do you know?
Yeah, okay. Hand out tapes to people.
Yeah.
Fiber, do you know the date?
Geez, off the top of my head, I don't remember what date it was. It was aired on a Friday.
It was a Friday, and a way to find out, if you listen to our show, you find the show where we were talking about it, and it was the Friday before that show. Anyway, thanks so much for calling. Got to move on to another phone call. By the way, speaking of media, did you notice Harper's this week? Harper's Magazine reprinted some of the White House pager traffic that that we kind of released to some media people.
Wow, what a coincidence.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. They only printed a little bit of it, just like the really funny stuff.
But, yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool. All right, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Where are you calling from?
Minnesota.
Minnesota?
Yeah.
I'll bet it's snowy out there.
Well, yeah, kind of, and it's cold. I'm just this real audio lag is screwing me up.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, it's a pretty long lag because we're on delay as it is, and then there's the real audio delay on top of that, so it's probably about 20 seconds.
You know that Minnesota is the home of two major federal prisons?
Is it really?
Yeah, Sandstone and Rochester.
Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Wow. Now you got something to be proud of.
Yeah, I just hope I don't have to go there or anything.
No, they send you to another state usually when.
Yeah. So, Emmanuel. I'm on IRC, and we're wondering, what's with the financial situation with 2600? You've been avoiding the topic.
Well, no, it's not that I'm avoiding it. It's just that there's better things to talk about than problems. It's all explained on the website. Basically, the nutshell is that we had a problem with our distributor that distributed practically all of our issues. They sort of went bankrupt on us while owing us for three issues. So we know that people are interested in the magazine. It's not a problem getting it out there. We just have to go through another distributor, and it'll be probably about half a year before we're back on our feet again. But we have every intention of dealing with this. And we just want people to know. You know, that's the reason why the autumn issue isn't out yet. It will be out. It's at the printer. It just won't be called the autumn issue because when you call something the autumn issue and it's winter, some stores like to take it off the shelves.
Yeah.
So it's going to be called... Well, just like it's kind of funny, just like the subway sign said, it will be volume 14, number 3.
Okay.
Damnedest thing that they knew that. Thanks for the concern, though.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
I have one quick. It's off topic, but I noticed that you're always talking about your OmniPoint phone and how it has email and all that.
Right.
Do you know, is PCS supposed to have that anytime soon? Because, like, here in Minnesota, we don't have GSM, you know.
Well,
PCS
is it encompasses GSM.
Yeah, all PCS is the band. It's the 1900 megahertz band, which GSM uses.
What service do you get in Minnesota?
Well, there's Sprint PCS, and then there's like AirTouch.
All right, if you get Sprint PCS, there's no reason why OmniPoint can't come in there as well, because you know the transmission range is about the same.
I'll have to double check. I thought there was some kind of coverage in. Minneapolis or Duluth or something with might have been Westcell.
Yeah, it wouldn't be OmniPoint. It would probably be another GSM company.
Yeah.
What you do is direct them to the webpage.
Yeah, actually, OmniPoint webpage. You could just go to www.omnipoint.com, and you can find your way to the coverage maps. And there's a map of the U.S., and you can click on Minnesota and see if there's anything there. It
tells you whatever provider is covering that area.
Right.
It's a very helpful thing to have. Hey, thanks for calling. We are out of time, unfortunately. want to thank our guest, our host. Best of luck to you, and please keep us updated on your trials and tribulations.
Right.
And, you know, we wish you the best of luck, and hopefully some people heard some of the things you had to say today.
All right, man.
All right, good luck.
All right, thanks.
Take care.
Later.
Fiber, I guess we'll see you next week.
Yes.
Welcome back to the world of freedom, where
thank you.
You no longer have to report or do anything that you don't
travel at will.
First time in 8 years, huh? You don't have to worry about these things. Great.
Nope.
All right. Well, that's good news. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein, have a good night.